Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive contribution to the world with their transformational thoughts, ideas, and activities that encourage and inspire. We'll explore important aspects and areas of life, including spiritual, physical, mental, relationships, disabilities, business, sales, and much, much more. My name is Tom Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm a regular contributor to their weekly e-zine, and I'll be speaking at the 2012 Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia coming up in a few weeks. Deepak Chopra is a keynote speaker for that event. I've also had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since age 5, 43 years now, and I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced. I know that makes me sound like a spider. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication that's the official and media-only media partner with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about me at my website, which is www.tom2andtall.com. I'm really excited to have as a guest today Jeffrey Gittimer, also a little bit nervous. As people know, Jeffrey is very, very well known in the world of sales training. He's the author of the New York Times bestsellers, The Sales Bible, The Little Red Book of Selling, The Little Black Book of Connections, and The Little Gold Book of Yes. All of his books have been number one bestsellers on Amazon.com. And Jeffrey's books have sold millions of copies worldwide. Jeffrey gives public and corporate seminars, runs annual sales meetings, and conducts live training programs on selling. Yes, attitude, trust, customer loyalty, and personal development. And he's also created a team of Gittimer certified speakers to bring his content to more audiences. Jeffrey's syndicated column, Sales Moves, appears in scores of business papers in the U.S. and Europe, and is read by more than 4 million people every week. Jeffrey's WOW websites, www.gittimer.com, G-I-T-O-M-E-R.com, and www.trainone, T-R-A-I-N-O-N-E.com, get more than 100,000 hits per week from readers and seminar attendees. His state-of-the-art presence on the web and e-commerce ability has set the standard among peers and has won huge praise and acceptance from customers. Jeffrey's weekly email magazine, Sales Caffeine, is a sales wake-up call delivered every Tuesday morning to more than 300,000 subscribers worldwide, free of charge. Sales Caffeine allows Jeffrey to communicate valuable sales information, strategies, and answers to sales professionals on a timely basis. To sign up for that newsletter, you can visit salescaffeine.com, S-A-L-E-S, caffeine, C-A-F-F-E-I-N-E.com. In 2008, Jeffrey was elected by his peers to the National Speakers Association Speaker Hall of Fame. The designation CPAE, which stands for Council of Peers Award for Excellence, honors professional speakers who have reached the top echelon of performance excellence. Welcome to the show today, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Tom. I thought I was dead and you were reading my eulogy, but I totally appreciate the introduction.
I am amazed at some of those numbers. I'm excited, aiming to get 10,000 visits to my website and to see you with 300,000 subscribers and 100,000 visits a week. Very, very cool. And as I said, everybody I've mentioned in the last few weeks that I told I was going to be speaking to you, they were all very impressed. They all recognized you, and so I'm very honored and slightly nervous.
Don't worry about it. Our common subject is attitude, and I think that pretty much calms everybody down.
Exactly. So, Jeffrey, I always start, and I know you're a huge supporter and fan of the Napoleon Hill Foundation. So tell me, when you first read Think and Grow Rich, how old were you, and maybe who introduced you to the book?
The year was 1972, and I was not in the best shape of my life. I was in one of those rotten marriages. The twins were just born. I was broke, And I got involved in this network marketing company, multi-level marketing company called Dare to be Great. And every morning for 1 year, we met at 8 a.m. and took a sales lesson and a positive attitude lesson 4 hours a day for one solid year. And we watched a movie called Challenge to America every morning. That was the Glenn Turner movie. And we reported, we did a book report on one chapter of Think and Grow Rich. Now, the book only has 15 chapters. So we were reporting, literally, we were reading the book every month for a year.
Wow.
It became almost a mantra for us to talk about some of the elements of the book, number one.
Yes.
To live the process of the book. And one of the secrets of attitude is not what most people think, which is fake it until you make it, but rather I decided to live it in advance so that I could picture myself with this positive attitude. I knew that I was going to achieve it. I just didn't know on what day. But in the meantime, I was going to be a direct reflection of it. And just like you, when people say, how are you going? I go, great. But at the time, it wasn't great. It was actually crappy. And I had to put myself forward and project to the day when it would be great.
Yes. And that's what happens, isn't it? I'm well known for always answering amazing when people ask how I'm doing. However, you can imagine with rheumatoid arthritis, I'm in pain 24/7. I'm usually in a lot of fatigue. I don't always feel amazing, but when you say amazing every time, and when you say it, you can't just say amazing. You got to say amazing. So people ask me why I feel amazing, so now I've got to give them a sales presentation on that. It reinforces it in my head, and it makes me feel amazing.
If people say, why do you feel amazing? You can say, because 3 out of my 4 joints are working.
Exactly. I tell them, actually, that 4 out of 10 people in the world don't eat every day, and so, I'm pretty grateful that I've eaten twice today. So there's always, people in way, way worse conditions than us and worse situations. And maybe you could tell our listeners maybe a few tips on how to maintain on a day-to-day basis that positive attitude. Because, as you know, no matter how positive you are, you're going to have days when you don't feel like it. But how do we control that attitude on a day-to-day basis?
Let me go back and explain a little bit further about my training, my sales training in the 70s. We didn't just do Napoleon Hill. We didn't just do Glenn Turner. We did a little bit of everybody. We listened to the 33 and a third recording on a record of Earl Nightingale's The Strangest Secret. We listened to J. Douglas Edwards on Closing the Sale. We listened to Herb True on how to inject humor into your process. We listened to Elmer Wheeler, we listened to Bill Gove, we listened to everybody who was at the state of their art at that time.
Right.
Cassette tapes were the brand new technology. So we had this cassette tape player that we looked at like it was some kind of demagogue that had come from outer space.
You're making yourself sound old.
It wasn't simply the fact that we exposed ourselves to one kind of training. We didn't just sit and read Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich.
Right.
We had a collection of people who were sharing their wisdom with us, and as a result of it, I determined everyone was positive. There wasn't one person on any one of those recordings that wasn't one of the most positive people I'd ever heard in my life. And because they were successful and because they were positive, I just assumed, hey, these guys are positive. If I'm positive, I can be successful too. It wasn't a real big picture. It was just a very wise assumption in terms of what was happening at that moment in time in my life. Now, how do I maintain it? It's simple. I just keep doing it. I wake up in the morning and I expose myself to positive attitude in some form or another, either by something that I write or something that I read or both. But I refuse to wake up in the morning and watch something stupid like who got beat up in a parking lot or what the weather's going to be or who bombed who or who lied about what. I don't need that in my life. So I pretty much ignore it.
Yes. And so many people, that would be number one advice I'd have for so many people. Just turn off the news and turn off the TV and purposely fill your brain with something positive to start every day.
I have an easier way of defining it. Don't get involved in other people's drama. And that includes, you know, The Bachelor on television and all the other stupid inane things that are there. If you eliminate other people's drama from your life, it becomes a hell of a lot easier to concentrate on the success of yours.
Totally, totally, because now you're not focused on all the craziness and, as you said, who murdered who and who's calling who a liar. This is not going to help your brain or your career or your life at all.
Yeah, I concur.
Another thing, Jeffrey, a lot of people email me, and I offer to do this for people to help them define their definite purpose. And as I was telling you earlier, even I wrote out my definite purpose, and then one of the instructors from the Napoleon Hill Foundation told me that that wasn't really my definite purpose. They knew what my purpose was, and what I had written was not it. When you started early in your career and you started reading Napoleon Hill, the first time you wrote your definite purpose, has it remained the same since you first wrote it, or has it evolved over the years, and is it like crystal clear for you now?
Well, unfortunately, when I started to write down definite major purpose, as I shared with you earlier, sort of off the record, I had no idea what it was. And so I put down a purpose just like everybody else would have a purpose to be successful and to make a lot of money and to have a nice family and to do things in my life that would be fulfilling.
Yes.
And I didn't really understand that the purpose was internal, not external. Yes, I'm here to help other people, but I can't help other people until I'm the best that I can be for myself first.
Right.
And that's what attitude is. You have to, if you cannot be your best person, then you can never be your best person for others. You must be best for yourself, then you can be best for others. So attitude at its core has a degree of selfishness to it.
Yes.
It's positive.
Really, really you're doing it for other people. You're being the best of yourself to give the best to others.
Right. I'm not being, I want to be the best dad. I want to be the best grandfather. But I cannot do that until I'm the best person for me. Once I'm the best person for me, then I'm qualified to be the best grandfather. And most people don't understand. They start in the middle. They start by saying, I'm going to be a good grandfather. You're probably not going to be because your attitude's crappy. And you're probably going to reprimand them. You're probably going to lose your patience with them. You're probably going to threaten them with some kind of thing or another, or worse, even hit them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not a way to be a father. That's not a way to be a grandfather. But it starts at your own core, your own internal harmony with yourself and your peacefulness with yourself and your self-assuredness for yourself and your thought process, your thought patterns. So I'll share with you this, the aha that got me to better purpose.
Okay.
When I found out that I love to sell, all I wanted to be was the best in the world at it. I loved it. I wanted to be. When I found out that I love to write, all I wanted to do was be the best in the world at it. When I found out I love to speak, then I just wanted to be the best in the world at it. And I know at my core, I can never be best about it until I'm the best about me. So I work on myself as hard or harder than I work on anything else that I do.
Jim Rohn is well known for speaking about that. Work as harder on yourself than you do on your job.
That's correct. He also had a pretty great statement that focused around all the information that you need to succeed already exists. The problem is you're not exposing yourself to it.
Right. Right.
And
if you don't seek it out, it's not going to come crashing down on you.
I ask my audiences now, how many people have not read Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill? And it's usually half the audience or more will raise their hand.
Wow.
Now, this comes at a time when electronic versions of everything are available. The copyright for the Napoleon Hill book has expired. Anybody in the world can publish that book or republish that book. E-readers dominate the reading world. Audio versions of the book have been made. The book has never been more available in its history.
Yes.
And the reason people ignore it is because the language in it seems too simplistic. The language in it seems as though it's not as valid or as valuable as it was in the 1930s when it was written. But it's no different than Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People or How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. Those are benchmark books. You don't read those books. You study those books.
Yes. And you take over the context.
You take the context of it and the content of it, and you transfer it to your life. You transfer it to your lifestyle. You transfer it to your family. But the first thing you do is you transfer it to your brain, and you look at it from the standpoint of, okay, what can I learn from this? How can I benefit from this? What can I change as a result of this? And how am I going to express myself in a different, more positive way? That's the whole deal.
Exactly. And it surprises me so much to meet people who are, oh, I'm fans of Jim Rohn. I'm fans of Tony Robbins. I'm fan with Earl Nightingale, Mark Victor Hansen. All these people publicly, loudly proclaim that they love Think and Grow Rich. So
sure.
Why would people not read the book that has started the careers of so many of the people that they already follow? It confuses me. And as a youngster, or not youngster, when I was in my early 20s, I got the Canadian Rights to Law of Success. I would go door to door to real estate offices, car insurance, life insurance, leave it with the sales manager for a week and offer to come pick it up in a week or pick up a check for $50. I was so shocked at what small percentage of people purchased the book. Probably the best book I've ever read in my life. And so it is shocking that more people do not read Think and Grow Rich.
Well, I have done the best that I possibly can to extol its virtues over the past few years. That, you know, I secretly publish the Napoleon Hill newsletter on a weekly basis. I put myself out as an example of how one can succeed by simply having that positive attitude, by dedicating myself to the way I think, and putting myself in a position where I'm literally a Johnny Appleseed for positive attitude every time I give a seminar. You know, I told you I'll be in London, Ontario, but I'll be in 20 places before London, Ontario. And I'll be talking about how you can become better as a result of changing the way you think, just even change the way you think about when you wake up in the morning. You know, how do you talk to your spouse? How do you talk to your kids? What's the mood you're in when you go to in the bathroom in the morning? Do you look in the mirror and smile and wink, or do you look in the mirror and you're all pissed off? And that's a personal choice. Everybody
totally.
Makes that choice, Tom.
And so many people wake up complaining about how badly they slept, how tired they are. Boy, this is not going to start your day off on a very good foot when you're telling your brain this already.
Well, I think that there's a pattern that people have that they need to change over the course of time, just slowly over time, in order to dedicate more time to themselves. They're more concerned with what they're going to do on the weekend and who they're going to party with or get drunk with or, you know, go to some activity with than they are spending a little bit of time on themselves.
And you don't even need to spend hours and hours. If you just spend a half hour a day on yourself, you know, committing yourself to having a better attitude and being better, being a better you, your results will just go through the roof. And so you are so right. So many people do not take that time on a daily basis. I hear it too at the office here, people going home to watch a specific show and sit at home all night and watch TV. Boy, that's not going to get you closer to your goals at all.
I concur. This is what I've done, and it's worked pretty well. If I'm going to spend 3 hours doing something other than working on myself, I balance my time by dedicating 3 hours to myself. So if I'm going to watch a ball game for 3 hours, then I write for 3 hours.
Wow.
And that's my definition of balance.
And that's a great definition and a great practice to have as well. Spend an equal amount of time becoming a better you as you do on recreation and leisure. Now, I noticed that you were inducted into the Speakers Association Hall of Fame. A friend of mine, W. Mitchell, has the CPAE designation, and I know it's rare, exclusive, and quite an honor to have received that. And probably when you first started out your first five speeches, you probably didn't think you would at some point, or maybe you did, be awarded the CPAE designation. How did that feel when you received that? Because for our listeners, I'll just emphasize that that is an amazing designation. People who have achieved it have been Ronald Reagan, for instance, Ronald Reagan, Art Linkletter, Zig Ziglar, Norman Vincent Peale, and Earl Nightingale. That is quite a club to belong to.
We don't talk to each other a lot in the club. Many of those people passed on, but I will tell you this. I was nominated to be in the Speakers Hall of Fame my third year in the National Speakers Association. That would be 1997.
Wow, and your third year.
I'm nominated. I'm going to win. Well, it took me 10 more years to get elected into it.
Okay, but to be nominated in the first 3 years is probably a milestone in itself.
That's true. I was pretty flattered by it, but I was equally as confident that I would get in because, you know, if you don't think you're the best speaker in the world, something's wrong. And, you know, my self-confidence level was probably a little bit too high, or at least too prematurely too high, and I just worked at it harder. I just kept plugging at it, and I will tell you, the reward of getting it, and I the convention that year was in New York City, so we went out on Broadway and kind of celebrated it. I had my photographer there. It was one heck of a day, one heck of an event, and yes, I'm very proud of it, and yes, I have a very high level of humility as a result of achieving the honor.
Oh, it's an amazing honor, and congratulations. And for being nominated so early, obviously people could see the talent that you had. And maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the other books other than Think and Grow Rich and Law of Success that Napoleon Hill wrote. Have you read most of Napoleon Hill's books? I imagine you read Outwitting the Devil, the newest one.
That's on my stack of books on my desk. I have not read that yet. But I have read all the early writings of Napoleon Hill. In fact, I was given a bunch of writings by the foundation. But the Magic Ladder of Success and How to Increase Your Salary. I even read Napoleon Hill's ex-wife's book on how to attract men and money.
Oh, you read that book. Wow.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm one of the people that actually has a copy of it.
Holy smokes. I just finished reading A Lifetime of Riches by the first executive director of the foundation, and he mentions, obviously, that book in there. So, wow, and you have a copy of it. That's very hard to find, I imagine.
I have also, you know, Napoleon Hill had a magazine that came out, The Golden Rule, I think was the name of it, but I have copies of that as well. The challenge when you're looking at positive attitude, though, is to create a diversity for yourself.
Right.
And so I'm a pretty solid authority on Orison Swett Marden, on Samuel Smiles, on Robert Collier, on Dale Carnegie, and on people that have written over the years about what attitude has done for them, how it's affected them, what their philosophy is about it. And if you summed everything up, there's a huge similarity to it. Earlier writers had a lot of spirituality in their writing, especially when you look at the writings of Elbert Hubbard.
Right.
But Orison Swett Marden as well. He was very God-based in his writings. But there's still the morality, there's still the thought transference, there's still the be the best person you can be for yourself. There's still all the things that encourage people to be better and have a base of enthusiasm rather than a base of anger or cynicism. So I think that what happens when I read a book, especially an old book, it reinforces my belief system. It reinforces what I'm thinking and how I'm supposed to take an action.
Exactly. And I love that book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. It was one of the first ones I read after Think and Grow Rich. I used strategies from that book to meet with the then Prime Minister of Canada because it talks in there a little bit about how to meet famous people. And I also managed to meet a number of other great people just using techniques on how to win friends and influence people, and just timeless wisdom, isn't it, from a lot of these old writers, as you said.
I think that you hit on a key there. The word is timeless, not old.
Yes, my dad says old is good.
Well, I think it's so good, but you have to convince a young person that old is not tired.
Yes.
Timeless.
Timeless.
In the book business, it's called evergreen, that your book will be printed year after year after year. My first book was The Sales Bible. It was published in 1994. It still sells lots of copies every year because of the fact that it's considered an evergreen book, and it's the top of the backlist. And, you know, stores still carry it all the time because it's a book that still has currency to it. I've rewritten it in the last 3 years because when I first wrote it, it didn't contain the word email. And your book has to be current in order to be perceived as valuable. But the bottom line is, not unlike any of the other books that are there for a long time, they have value at their core, regardless of whether you mention email or not. They talk about how to treat people. They talk about how to live your life. They talk about how to connect with people, how to engage people, how to make people loyal to you. Those are the foundational elements, whether it's attitude or sales skills.
Exactly, and it goes back to what you spoke about earlier. When you make yourself the best person you can be through this timeless knowledge and wisdom, no matter what your actual job or business is, you will be better at it by making yourself better and exposing yourself to timeless wisdom that millions and millions of people have read and followed over the years.
Yeah, I would encourage anybody who's listening to just go get the book and read a chapter a day or a chapter every week, and you'll find that the truths in that book will change the way you think and change the way you live your life.
Totally, and review it on a regular basis. I think this is important for people, as what I do is I have a couple of books, three of them that I read every year. And so some of these books are worth revisiting and renewing the thoughts and the attitudes that you had previously. And so Think and Grow Rich is one I reread regularly. And as you mentioned, there's so many formats for it now. You can get it on audio. You can get it streaming online. You can get it in ebook form. There's no excuse, not even money as an excuse, to not read Think and Grow Rich, because it's available for free in many different formats these days.
I'm also going to challenge the salespeople that are listening. Napoleon Hill wrote a book, actually the next book after Think and Grow Rich that came out, was called How to Sell Your Way Through Life.
Yes.
And I consider that the best sales book ever written.
Wow.
So I would look at that from the standpoint of if you're a salesperson, you got to own the book. You can pick it up in paperback. There's all kinds of places where you can get it. I would try to find it at a used bookstore or at bookfinder.com or somewhere on eBay. They sell them occasionally. Just be careful you don't overpay. Probably about $100 should buy you the book in its old original form.
Wow.
It's a classic, priceless, timeless book that every salesperson should own and read.
Exactly, and I've read it myself. Don Green sent me a copy of it, and as you said, when I read it, and I've read over 100 books on sales, I thought, wow, not only is Think and Grow Rich an amazing book, but this is at least one of the best sales books I've ever read.
Yeah, I agree with you. I totally, when I read that book, it was literally an eye-opener and a mind-opener, because how could a book so old be so current?
Exactly. With all these newfangled sales techniques and strategies, how could a book that's so old be so current? But again, you went back to earlier, but it's how you're treating people, how you treat your attitude, how you work on yourself. And when you do all those things, no matter what you sell, you're going to be better at it. Now, tell me a little bit about your book, The Little Red Book of Selling. When I read the Napoleon Hill Foundation e-zine every week, that is the book that's one of the books that they recommend at the bottom or that's for sale. And of the people I've spoken to about you, that's the one that they all have read. Is that your most popular one, your best-selling book, that Little Red Book of Selling?
Actually, it is. It has sold almost a million copies in English in America, but it has sold millions of copies in its other formats, especially globally. I think it appears in 20-something languages. It's very universally distributed. It is. We are now calling it the largest selling sales book of all time.
Wow. Wow, that's a nice title to have for a book.
You're not kidding.
And of all time, man.
So I look at it as I'm real proud of the fact that it's there. One of the reasons that it sells as well as it does is because it's an easy to read format, but it also talks about why people buy, not just how to sell.
Ah, okay. Which is very key. So many books only talk about how to sell to these people, but not what is going on in their mind to make them make this decision.
That is correct.
And so you can have 101 different sales closes, but if you don't know what's going through the person's mind as to the decision-making process, those closes are not going to hit the button.
Well, not only that, it's kind of an old way to sell anymore. I think that closing the sale is kind of over. I think that you need to engage somebody and figure out a way that they can become excited about buying. When you go to get a new car, do you want to be closed or do you just want to go buy the car?
Yeah, I want to buy the car from someone who can tell me everything I want to know and buy the car that I want, not be sold into buying a car. Yeah. So, yeah, you're totally right. Buyers like to buy. People like to buy, but they do. I go back to what Zig Ziglar talks about. They buy from people they like and they trust. And so that's a lot of personality skills, not so much closing skills.
Yeah, I agree. So the Little Red Book of Selling has been a benchmark book for me. It created a brand for me. All the other books that I've written over the course of the last almost decade now since that book came out have had a similar look to them. If you look at the gold book or the black book or the green book, you know, they all kind of look alike, and there's a reason for that, and that is I'm establishing myself as a branded writer, not simply a writer.
Ah, okay, yes. So, because I had noticed that when I looked at the Sales Bible, the Little Red Book of Selling, and I also saw the Little Black Book of Connections, as you said, they all look very similar on Amazon.
Right. There's a reason.
I thought there might be a reason, other than just it's a great formula. You had an amazing book, and all of the others have been top sellers as well, so you seem to have a great formula there. I was also wondering, like, obviously you agree with the going the extra mile principle. That's one of the 17 principles. Because of this newsletter that you put out, I've always been impressed that you helped the foundation put out that newsletter, but you'd have to work hard to find out that Jeffrey Gittimer does that. It's not splattered all over the e-zine every week that you are the one who helps them put that together, other than your Little Red Book of Selling being among their books listed at the bottom. And other people might brag about it or put their name through it, that e-zine, to know who was helping put it together. And
yeah, I don't think that philanthropy has any place in public relations. Either you do it, you want to do it, or you don't. And
exactly.
For me, you know, I got my positive attitude because of Napoleon Hill. What's that worth? And all I'm doing is telling the foundation, thank you, here's an email magazine every week. Do whatever you want with it.
I totally agree with that. If you're going to do it for philanthropic reasons, do it for philanthropic reasons. Don't tie business back to it, and don't try and get PR or marketing out of it, because then you're really not totally doing it for the going the extra mile principle. You're doing it for your own principle. And so I really appreciate that. I look at that e-zine, and I know how many people it goes out to, and I know there's work involved in it. So I thank you for the work you do on that. Man, as a regular contributor to it, I really appreciate that you helped put that together with the foundation. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, for your time today. I really appreciate it. I've only been nervous a few times speaking to people on the phone. I've myself been on phone sales for over 20 years. I've made over a quarter million dials and spoken to over 5,000 presidents and senior executives, and I rarely get nervous. But with yourself and with Jack Black from the UK, I was slightly apprehensive before the show because of your great reputations. But thank you so much for joining me today. It was a real honor to speak to someone with your credentials and someone who's such a big fan of the Napoleon Hill Foundation. I really, really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I wish you success on your speech coming up at the symposium. I think you'll do a great job.
Thanks so much, Jeffrey. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you in April when you come to London, Ontario, which is about an hour from Toronto, where I'm located, and I'll look forward to seeing you at that event. It's a public event you mentioned, right?
Yep. You can go to my website and find out about it, gitomer.com, G-I-T-O-M-E-R.com. I'm not sure of the exact dates, but it's somewhere in the middle of the month.
I will find it, and I will help promote it on our Canadian Business Journal publication, and I'll see you in April.
You got it. I'll look forward to it.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Have an amazing day.
Bye.
Take care.